Hello and welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. To pilfer shamelessly from Dickens's A Tale of Two Cities, it has been the best of times and the worst of times for the growing ranks of Central Ohioans devoted to the bicycle commute. We're going to talk today about both. We'll be joined by a regional planner in charge of bicycling issues and also an advocate for bicycling. First, let's briefly review the situation. It has been the worst of times because in just a year, two men were cut down on their bikes. One was a longtime bicycling advocate who died from injuries when a pickup struck him as he pedaled across town to join others for a weekend pleasure ride in July. The other was a commuter forced by circumstances to navigate the narrow berm of a narrow road in the dark of morning almost a year ago. And that doesn't count the number of bicyclists driven from the road by the threat of death or the number who just didn't commute at all because of the dangers. And it also doesn't count the numbers of drivers who are frustrated as well to have to share the road with people on two wheels that they're scared to death of killing. But it has also been some of the best times. Since the City of Columbus in May 2008 announced plans to add 31 miles of off-street trails and 58 miles of on-street bike lanes and routes and to make High Street friendlier to bicyclists. It has been the best of times since the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission started work on its color-coded bicycle suitability map based on cyclists' experiences. And I don't know if that's done yet or not. We'll talk about that later. Also, more COTA buses have bike racks, and the city is looking at a proposed set of parking rules that would call for more bicycle parking. The Pelotonia a few weeks ago attracted thousands of participants, including racing legend Lance Armstrong, and millions of dollars for cancer research. Two local rides intended to raise bicyclist awareness gained momentum this year as well. It has been the best of times since January 1 as well, when the U.S. tax code was amended to credit companies when they pay a monthly stipend to workers who commute by bicycle. And on Friday, Ohio State University's Olentangy River Wetlands Research Park will celebrate the grand opening of its first solar-powered bike shelter along the bike path that passes through the wetlands site. All Sides producer Amy Jerovich visited the site and spent some time last week with Dr. William Mitch. He's the Distinguished Professor of Natural Resources, Environmental Science, and Ecological Engineering and Director of the Olentangy River Wetland Research Park at OSU. We're going to hear him describe his new baby.
It's actually a very simple design, four poles on a roof is the way I jokingly say, but it's a shelter with a sloped roof that's sloped towards the south and facing the south for a reason, because we have solar collectors on the roof. And it also has some signs about the dominant birds out here, and we'll continue to put interpretive signs as we go on of what they see at the wetland. And there's a beautiful view right out the back of one of our wetlands itself. So he also has benches for people to sit and relax and to enjoy the view of the wetlands. We've used solar energy for our instruments throughout the site, so we're used to doing that on a small scale, but we thought, well, let's put a solar collector on the roof and generate electricity. And then we said, okay, what are we going to use electricity for? And I did not want lights out here. We have no lights to speak of on this site at night because we don't want to disrupt the wildlife. So then somebody came up with the idea, I don't remember who, of having a bicycle tire pump run by the solar energy, and we thought that was a pretty cute idea. So basically it's run by a compressor that you turn on with a switch that's here right on the bike path shelter, and you turn it on and it makes a lot of noise, and then you just like you would add air to any bicycle tire. And it will run for about a minute and then shut off, and then by then you should have your tires pumped up. If not, push the button again. It's always working because there are batteries in there. I suppose you come here at midnight, it'd be pretty dark, but in theory you could come out here at midnight and pump your tires. Well, we're on the Olentangy River wetland site now, and we're at the head of the two kidney-shaped wetlands that we're famous for. And to my left is a wetland that we did not plant, and to my right is a wetland that we did plant. And that was 15 years ago, and that still remains a very interesting experiment. It's natural beauty, and it's also very serious research. If I was a physicist and it was a cyclotron, everybody would be excited and say, oh, that's science going on there. But because it's beautiful, it doesn't mean it's not important science we're doing here. It's a very, very cutting-edge stuff we're doing on how nature works, how we can create and restore wetlands, what we should do, what we shouldn't do, and in the end, how we fix the planet.
Okay, Bill. Nice tour. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I love the backs of the backdrop. Those were chirping bugs of some...
Probably, and then the running water as well, yeah.
Okay. You're an expert in wetlands research and restoration. What inspired you or your group to look at a bike shelter?
Well, I think over the years, now the city had plans for a right-of-way through that site long before we built the wetlands, and they built the bike path after we had built our original wetlands. And the traffic there is enormous, and more people would come up to me and they say, I've been on the bike path, and, oh, I didn't know I was going through the wetland. I didn't know I was going through Ohio State University, through a major research laboratory, so to speak. And so we thought, well, if we could get them to stop for a moment and enjoy the view and give a few interpretive signs of what the wetlands are all about, we're accomplishing something and we're helping the biking community. And so that's how we came to build it. We got a couple donations. We got a donation from American Electric Power, and we got a grant from the state of Ohio, and put those two together and built the shelter with the solar collectors on the roof.
Okay. We're talking to Dr. William Mitch of the Ohio State University's Olentangy River Wetlands Research Park. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you know about the folks who pedal through the wetlands?
We don't know a lot about them. We know it's a lot of people, especially on beautiful weekends and so on. Traffic is enormous coming through there. It's a mixed bag of joggers, runners, walkers, skaters, bikers, you name it. They're coming through there. I suspect there's a lot of traffic to and from the university by students and even some faculty that have come up and down. So it's hard to say. It's a mixed group of people from the university and the city, and we're very pleased that they go through the site. We think it's a beautiful place, and I think they do too, and so now they'll be able to stop and enjoy it that much more.
I was going to ask, bicyclists tend to fly through. They don't stop. You
right.
want them to stop and appreciate what you have there.
Well, if they stop once a quarter to add air to their tire, that's okay.
Are you a bicyclist?
Sometimes. I mostly run.
Do any of the folks who work with you?
Yeah, some of them. One of our graduate students is quite professional about it, actually, and he bikes all the time.
Commutes to work and...
Yeah. We've got more students commuting. That's an interesting story. We built our wetland research building out at the site there, and we had a bicycle rack, and for the first 2 years it was empty, and it was like the students were still driving to work. And then all of a sudden one or two started biking, and now a lot of them bike to work. It's a good sign.
Because they see someone else is surviving the trip and...
I guess so. And because we have that bike path, at least on a north-south corridor, it goes right up to our door.
Right. What have you learned about bicycling from working there and seeing them?
Well, I've learned that it's a very polite group for the most part. They watch out for the wetlands. Once they find out, they get my email or phone number, and that's fine. We have all sorts of people that will say, hey, Professor Mitch, there's something wrong with your wetland. There's no water in it. Or Professor Mitch, did you see the graffiti on your whatever? They're watching out for us,
uh-huh.
And that's cool. I thought when we put the bicycle trail through the wetlands, I didn't know whether it would be a positive or negative. But on the whole, it's been a very, very positive thing. We depend on the public. Principally funded by donations to the university, and so we very much reach out to the public wherever we can.
What's next after this? Is the the world your oyster now with bike trails, or what do you
know?
Do
that's
next?
A good question. We're going to actually give a preliminary announcement on Friday about what we're going to be suggesting to the city and my university. I hope they would agree to it. That we have basically an ecological corridor from our wetland, which is on the north side of campus, all the way down to the Whittier Peninsula, where the Grange Insurance Audubon Center was just opened recently, and they have basically a green-blue corridor that any self-respecting fish, mammal, or human can go unimpeded that entire 8.6 miles without being stopped.
It's only 8.6 miles.
Yes, and we have to take out one or two dams, but that's okay. We'll do that too.
Because are dams good for the wildlife?
No.
Okay.
They're not very good at all. Some fish, but in general, we'd like to see the Fifth Avenue Dam removed as part of that mission.
So what's going to happen on Friday at the grand opening?
Well, we're going to have the mayor and the president, Joe, of American Electric Power, come out and make some very brief remarks, and we'll cut a ribbon, or actually we're thinking about cutting a vine rather than a ribbon, but we'll cut something. And then we'll have an open house at the wetland for the rest of the day.
So how long was the process in developing this site?
We started about 1992, 93, so it's 15 or 16 years now of doing it. So it's a well-developed site now, but you can't build wetlands overnight, and that's one of our messages, I think.
And the bike trail went through? The
bike trail was built about 1998.
Okay.
So we had already, most of our wetlands already constructed by then.
So 11 years later now we're going to give a nod to the bikers.
Yes.
Have people been stopping and using it already?
Yes. Yeah, it's fun to watch if people stop and they'll figure out that they can pump up their tires and do so.
Which I wanted to ask, were you actually pumping up a tire there?
I didn't have a bike right there at the moment, no.
All right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 614-292-8513. We're talking about commuter bicycling in Central Ohio. We thought we'd start with some good news. The new bike shelter at the Olentangy River Wetlands Research Park at OSU. Joining the conversation with now is Jeff Stevens of Consider Biking and the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission's Bernice Cage. She has been working there for 20 years. Bernice, what's changed in 20 years? Was bicycling or bicycle commuting even on the radar map back then?
It was, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
It was very minimum back then, 20 years ago. There were not a lot of trails. The Olentangy was in existence at that time, but there wasn't a lot of biking throughout the city. And it has really taken 20 years to get the public to accept bicycling and to get our local communities to accept and start building bike facilities. It's one thing to want to bike, but it's another thing to have the facilities in which to bike on.
Back then, were you even thinking of bicycling as a commuter prospect? I think, yeah.
There we go. In the early 70s, there was a public interest in cycling. And then, I don't know, something happened and the interest sort of went away. But then gradually throughout the years as a result of high fuel prices, people started taking another interest in cycling to get back and forth to work because it was just cheaper. A lot of your lower income groups couldn't afford to own and operate an automobile, so they wanted to resort. They had to resort to biking or walking to get around. And now we recognize the fact that there are a lot more benefits to cycling, such as improving one's health is a major benefit that's taken a lot of interest now. But even before then, there were other interests, such as the benefit to the environment by not driving your automobile.
And when not burning the gas that you can't afford.
True that. And using your own body to get back and forth to places. So today, I guess you'll see a culmination of all those things. The interest in exercising. You know, if you have to get to work, you might as well exercise while you do it. Energy efficiency by not using and burning fossil fuels to get back and forth to work. You're saving the environment, a reduction in air pollution, and it just goes on. And it saves money. You don't have to pay to park and a lot of different things.
Ah, parking. Yes, that's another. That's one of the good things. We're going to take a break right now. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about commuter bicycling in Central Ohio. Joining us today, you just heard Bernice Cage from the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission talking about what their visions are, what the good and the bad is, and then I will return with Jeff Stevens of Consider Biking, a biking advocacy group. We'll talk about some of the sad things that have happened over the last year. Call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
President Obama tells students to do their homework, study hard, and stay healthy.
I hope all of you are washing your hands a lot.
The big healthcare pitch still to come in prime time. Will the public option survive? I'm Neil Conan. Congress returns. Joe Kennedy will not run for his uncle's Senate seat. Van Jones resigns under fire. The political junkie joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon. It starts at 2 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurovich. 71 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1021.
Support for WOSU comes from the Franklin Park Conservatory's From Field to Table Festival, a weekend celebration of local food, family fun, and healthy living on September 12th and 13th. More at fpconservatory.org.
You can expect some sunshine this afternoon, but still a chance of showers, maybe a thunderstorm later today, and a high of 78 degrees. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us in the studio today is Jeff Stevens. He's executive director of Consider Biking. It's a Central Ohio bicycling advocacy organization. Welcome aboard, Jeff.
Thanks.
Jeff, you're the executive director of Consider Biking. You have spent the first 20 years of your career in the nonprofit health industry and the rest in a kind of an ancillary health industry, biking, right?
Correct.
It's sometimes not very healthy to bicycle when you're on a busy street and there's lots of carbon monoxide to breathe, or when you're on a busy street with little lighting and there's nowhere to go if a truck comes down the road and hits you. Can you talk about, since the fellow was killed last September, I think it was September 9th or 10th, right? We're almost exactly a year away from that.
Tracy Corbin
along Allen Creek Drive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what's happened since then, what the fallout has been? I know you follow all the blogs and what the chit-chat is.
And we've had, in the last several years, we've had approximately about three fatalities a year in the Franklin County area. And unfortunately, it took somebody from the sort of the mainstream cycling community like Steve Barber to really wake up the traditional established cycling community they're upset about this, obviously. Unfortunately, the people like Tracy was a wonderful role model who couldn't afford a car and was out there riding his bike to work at 5 a.m. And there have been other people that have been kitchen workers that have been coming home at midnight and
right.
things like that. So, yeah, those are tough circumstances. But the circumstances that Steve were in 2 months ago were pretty. There was no defense to what happened with him. So, I've been asked a number of times, how can you get out there on your bike? And I very quickly reply, well, the benefits outweigh the risks. The health, the livability, the joy, the pure joy of cycling just outweigh this possibility of getting hit by a car. And interestingly, the League of American Bicyclists, publishes cycling data around crashes, and only, I think it's 17% of bicycle crashes involve a car. And very few from a car from behind, which seems to be our biggest fear. They're traditionally, cars turning in front
as you're crossing the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so we're trying to tell people, hey, get out there. And we've got a chicken and an egg situation that it's, we know that when you put more cyclists on the road, it becomes safer for them. Yet cyclists don't want to get on the road unless there's some sort of accommodation like a bike lane or a sharrow or a widened shoulder. So that's why we're pushing two fronts. We're pushing the planners and engineers and elected officials, which we have some very enlightened ones around here in this area, to put more facilities and say, build it, and they will come. And we're trying to push cyclists out there and say, or people considering it, hey, get out there, and the more of you that are out there, it'll be safer.
One of the dangers that Tracy faced was the fact that he had no options. The bus route didn't at the time. I think it goes there now, but at the time didn't go as far out as he needed it to for where he lived in a multi-unit housing complex.
Mm-hmm.
There are other places in the city where people need to ride a bike because they can't afford a car. It's an economic decision. I think Shauna, are you there with us? You were going to ask about something like that on the far east side of Columbus?
Yes, I'm on the far east side of Columbus, right by Reynoldsburg, and I love to bike, and I have a bike that I can actually attach my daughter's bike to my bike, so she's biking with me and learning, you know, the ropes, but I can't leave my house and just start riding because Livingston and Bryce Road, they're not conducive for riding a bike. And I was wondering, are there any plans to put a bike trail or something there?
What about that, Bernice?
Well, there is a bike trail. There is the Allen Creek, the Three Creeks bike trail. It's the closest to you. There is Blacklick Metro Park has a small trail in it, and it goes from the entrance all the way north, almost to Broad Street. And then there is the Three Creeks Trail that you can access off of Williams Road, and that'll take you all the way to almost to Pickerington Ponds or all the way north to north of Broad Street. So even though you would have to drive to both of those places, there are trails there that are available to you. Livingston is way too congested, in my view, for a beginner cyclist. Main Street is too congested. Broad Street is too congested. Of all those three, in my view, Broad Street is the safest because it has paved shoulders. It has some place for you to ride if you had to ride. Livingston and Main Street doesn't have enough room, in my view, for the car and for a cyclist unless you're on the sidewalk. And we all know that riding on the sidewalk is against the law. So I'm not going to recommend Main Street or Livingston. And at this point, you know, what I do, because I don't live too far from Reynoldsburg, is that I take my bike and I go to the trails and ride that, or I'll ride on Broad Street out into the rural areas, because Broad Street does have paved shoulders, but it's also 45 miles an hour.
As for, well, speed, right. And lots of times different visibility issues come into play. There's all sorts of different factors besides just having the room on the side of the road. But you mentioned the sidewalks. Now, the laws are different for kids, right? Children in some municipalities may ride on the sidewalks.
Yes.
Okay, but adults, no.
Right.
What's the problem with riding on a sidewalk? You know, Bernice or Jeff?
Well, studies show that it's much more dangerous. The likelihood of an interaction or a crash are much greater for a person on a sidewalk.
But not with a car.
Well, possibly. A lot of cyclists or bicyclists, you know, ride across where the pedestrian crossing, and you're, you know, much more vulnerable to a right hook from a car, you know, going through that intersection.
And why is that? Why is that? Are you more vulnerable?
Well, because a bicycle moves much faster than a pedestrian and will come upon that intersection much faster, and the car and or the cyclist may not see each other. Whereas a pedestrian, a motorist might be looking for a pedestrian to crosswalk and not a bike who just, you know, suddenly appears.
And also it places the cyclist, a lot of times a cyclist on a sidewalk is going in the opposite direction than they would be if they were acting as a motor vehicle. So a car knows to look for the most immediate threat, which would be another car. So if a cyclist was in a bike lane, they would be positioned correctly on the road. And so when a motorist is looking to see if they can turn or see if they can go straight, they are looking in the direction where that cyclist should be. That's what makes it safer for a cyclist to be on a road versus on a sidewalk. On a sidewalk, they're coming in any direction, all directions. You know, they don't even cross at crosswalks. They just cross anywhere.
Out there.
Seems like such a civilized place, too.
Well, and that's what makes it dangerous because, you know, the cyclists are moving at a higher rate of speed. And before you know it, you know, the car is right there or the cyclist is right there, and there's not enough time for them to stop. And that's what causes your accidents.
I think it's interesting how people, when they're riding a bike, particularly if they're recreational riders, forget what it must be like to be in a car suddenly and not have them in the line of vision. And conversely, people who are in cars forget what it must be like and how vulnerable a bicyclist is. I don't know how you you fix that problem because it is seems to be ever present. However, as far as the trails or the bike users map is concerned, that is completed now. It is available where? It was, let's see, before I skip, it was produced by the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, MORPC Ride Solutions, the City of Columbus, Consider Biking, Jeff's Group, CODA, Central Ohio Transit Authority, and the Franklin County Engineer's Office. Where can we get this?
Most every bike shop. We've been stocking the bike shops with them, libraries.
We have them at MORPC. They mm-hmm. could always call us and or just pick one up when they come into our office.
Can they call or write for one?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Okay.
Either
and what does this map tell us?
It tells us how suitable a road is for biking.
It's
based on sort of like the traffic light. Red means stop, yellow means caution, and green means go. And those roads have been assessed to determine based on traffic volume, based on speed, based on how many lanes there are, as to whether or not it's a good road to ride on, which would be a green, or whether or not it's a very scary road and only your experienced cyclist should ride on it. And that would be a red. And this is during non-peak hours, non-rush hours is the most important thing about this map. Is so,
okay.
And it's designed for the basic or the beginner cyclist,
okay.
Not the experienced, because an experienced cyclist can cycle anywhere, basically.
Okay.
But your basic cyclist really could use this map because it tells them how suitable that road is, comfortable or friendly it is.
So Shauna on the Far East Side could pick up this map, she could look, and she could find the safest route.
She can look for the green ones.
For the green routes.
Well, unfortunately, there are not as many green as we'd like. So that's a snapshot of the way it is now. And we're probably one of the last metropolitan areas in the country to finally get a nice map like this.
Really?
Up to date. And we're so excited, and the people have just been, sucking them up. We've got to print more. But what's so encouraging for us is that the mayor, Bike and Mike, and city council people and the planners and the engineers around the municipalities are saying, we want to turn the red and yellows to green.
Right.
And there is a bike plan out there for Columbus, the Bicentennial Bike Plan, and it literally has a plan for how to change 500-plus miles of mm-hmm. our roadways just in Columbus to, a multi-use path or sharrow markings or lanes or signage. So there's a plan, and it's just going to take time and money.
And money.
And money. And different communities pitching in. Mm-hmm. It's not just Columbus's issue.
Yeah,
and
Bernice and I are very keen to this concept of a regional plan. So we need, Dublin and Hilliard, who are very enlightened. We need them to be talking at the table with Columbus so that there's an interconnectivity between them all.
Okay, let's go to a bike etiquette issue, one that I know irritates a lot of people on both sides of it. It's from Greg, who says he's an avid rider. Greg, you're on the air.
Hi. I love to ride bicycles, and I absolutely love all the things the city has done for bicyclists. But one thing that drives me nuts when I'm driving is I'll see a bicyclist, and they usually have an expensive bike, and they have the bicycle closed, and they're riding right down the middle of the lane when they could very easily pull to the right, and it's almost like a status thing, and it's dangerous, and it makes the cars wait on them, have to pass around. What's your opinion on that, and why do some bicycles do that?
Thanks, Greg.
Well, this is Jeff, and this is pretty simple. Our group tries to advocate and encourage and educate cyclists to behave and act like a vehicle. A bicycle is a vehicle. And it's funny, you talked about being out surfing in between lanes. We see so many cyclists that come up and surf along the right side of the cars in waiting at a light and get up in front. You can't do that in a car. Let's not do it on a bicycle. Let's wait your place in line. So, we're trying to get that message out there and educate people. And, for instance, the little markings are right there on the map, some of the basic education. So, I spend an hour or two of my week defending those guys that run through red lights and the people who surf along the right side of the car. So it's
I suppose sometimes I've done that because otherwise I'm locked into a long line of carbon monoxide belching vehicles, and if I get up to the front, I can breathe easier. But that's still not an excuse.
Correct.
That's not.
And the only reason why the cyclist would be in the middle of the lane, like you're referring to, Greg, is that if they need to switch lanes to turn, mm-hmm. you know, so if you're acting like a motor vehicle and you need to get over into your left lane in order to make a left-hand turn, then you need to get in the middle of that lane to show and to actually get a position in the lane and then start getting over as you would as a car so you can make a left-hand turn. You don't want to try and make a left-hand turn from the far right side. So sometimes if you see them there, if you pay attention, they should be moving over, or maybe they're coming into a position that is just really, really unsafe for them. And at that point, they're taking the lane because it's safer for you to see them right in the middle of the lane than for someone to try and squeeze them out or for them to do some other maneuver. So it could be a safety move for them to get through a very hairy, a hairy situation.
Sometimes, though, it's just somebody trying to make a snarky point that I can do this, so I'm going to do it, and you're just going to have to live with it, particularly if it's a two-lane road or something like that, and they could move over. Jeff, this is sort of that radical
and by and large,
vanguard of bicycle right race.
You know, 95% of cyclists are law-abiding, respectful
right.
people, and we try and teach and educate people how to be respectful of their place in traffic and not to – you know, hog a lane just because they can legally. But there's a delicate dance, and it's, like, you know, how do you dance down High Street with a bus? It's
right.
It takes some time to figure that out.
Or if that lane isn't wide enough. You say there's a lane. Sure, there's a lane there. But if that lane is 12 feet wide and there's a cyclist there in a car, there's not enough room. That car will have to move over into the other lane to overtake that cyclist. If it's a 10-foot lane or 11-foot lane, there's absolutely no room. And so so that cyclist has to be – may have to make a judgment call and say, in order for me to get through this, I'm going to have to be in the middle of the lane. And then once I'm clear or I feel that I'm safe, then I can move over. So it could be a situation like that,
and too. That's a best-case scenario because that means they actually see them.
Right.
And if
that's
it's
right.
dark and
they
there's not any
you.
Lighting or it's raining out or something
you wanna
like that –
You want to be seen.
Then
you want to be
you're
seen.
You're pretty much out of luck. We have an email from Diane, speaking of High Street. She says, I would like to also ask the City of Columbus to see to it that there is a safe lane for bikes, especially down High Street in the University District. This is a highly visible and highly used bike route. Please tell me that there are plans to make this happen. Is that in the plan?
Not a lane, but markings on the road called sharrows.
How do you spell that?
S-H-A-R-R-O-W-S. It's a shared arrow, a little chevron with a little bike on it, indicating that a bike is allowed there in the lane. And we launched that Share the Road campaign in May with Mayor Mike and Dr. Gee, and the signs will actually go up this fall very soon. Very soon there'll be an announcement about that. And the actual markings on the road from Graceland down to downtown will probably go in the spring.
We have another emailer who wants to know if you can get the bike map online. Is there a way
yes.
to do that
yes.
online?
Yes, on our website, morpsey.org, www.morpsey.org, and go into our transportation transportation page, and then you'll see a menu over to the side that has the maps. You can print the north side of the map or the south side of the map. That's available to you both sides. So just pick a side and I'll show you how to print it.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about bicycle commuting in Central Ohio. Coming up, how do regional planners plan for such a future? How do they even know it has a future? Joining us is Jeff Stevens of Consider Biking and Bernice Cage of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, who will tell us all about it. And we'll get some ideas from our callers who have been patiently waiting. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support WOSU Public Media by becoming a volunteer today. WOSU is currently looking for a daytime volunteer to assist with the administration of the volunteer program. You must be computer proficient and may go through an application and interview process. For more information on this and other volunteer opportunities, visit us online at wosu.org/volunteers. And thanks for supporting WOSU.
And good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich, 72 degrees in downtown Columbus. In just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides with Ann Fisher will be here. In light of a report that Ohio ranks 39th in the percentage of women with four-year college degrees, we'll hear about the barriers in women's advancement in Ohio and ways to improve female opportunities. That's at 11 o'clock on All Sides with Ann Fisher. In the weather forecast for today, some sunshine this afternoon. There is a chance of showers and thunderstorms later this afternoon and a high of 78 degrees. For tonight, some clouds and a chance of rain this evening and a low of 55. And be sure to tune in tonight at 8. President Obama will address a joint session of Congress to talk about his plans to overhaul the nation's health care system. Melissa Block hosts coverage from NPR with analysis from NPR reporters and newsmakers. Listen to live coverage tonight at 8 right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And now back to All Sides.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about bicycle commuting in Central Ohio. I'm here with Jeff Stevens of Consider Biking and Bernice Cage of MORPC. I mentioned some high points that I thought were on the horizon for the biking community, particularly the bicycle commuting community. Did I miss anything, or do you want to go into more detail about anything, maybe the 2012 plan?
Well, Columbus did just get designated as a League of American Bicyclist bike-friendly community, the bronze level. And that was really based on our plan for the future. So we really have to make that plan happen now. And I just want to say, you talked about what does a plan look like. You know, we so often, you know, point to Portland or Chicago, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., or Amsterdam or Paris or Copenhagen. We go, oh, come on, that's just Europe, the way it's always been. But they have had massive increases in their bike mode in just the last 25 years because they invested in it. And that was the case in Portland and Chicago and San Francisco and Seattle, all these cities we aspire to be, and quite frankly, the cities we compete with for the retention of young talent and economic development. They've invested slowly over the years. So we're just sort of behind, but we've got a great plan now, and we need people to join us to raise their voices, to really push the communities to get these accommodations. And it'll make our city more livable, more competitive.
You said that you're going to the big corporate honchos now, and
yeah.
they're supportive of this as well. This isn't just some, as you said, crunchy granola, whatever pejorative. How a granola ever became a pejorative, I'll never know. But
we've been meeting with top-level CEOs in Columbus. You know, probably we've reached out to met with maybe 15 of them over the last couple of months and talking about why cycling is good for their bottom line, that it helps the health of their employees, it increases the wellness, and how it creates a more livable community to attract and retain young talent. So they get it. And what we do is consult with these businesses at that level, the human resource department level, the wellness department, the facilities management, to help encourage and then educate the grassroots people. Hey, how do you consider riding your bike to work, you know, one day every other week? That would make a huge, huge difference.
So would a shower when you get there.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a problem, isn't it?
Well, it is. We Americans are pretty hung up on this vanity thing. And, you know, we know so many people that ride a few miles. My wife rides, from Old Worthington down to OSU. And, you know, she just sort of wipes off and doesn't ride very hard when she's riding to work.
You're trying to guilt trip me now, aren't
you? Yeah.
That's about my route. How does MORPC decide a plan? How does that work, Bernice? We've got some people waiting here with some of their own ideas on the telephone lines. But first, tell us how you do it.
Well, planning is takes a lot of cooperation and collaboration because we're planning for a region here. We want our region to be more livable, and we want to offer various modes of transportation. We want to get people out of the automobiles. We want them to be able to bike from one city to the next to destinations throughout our entire 12-county area. So we need the cooperation and the collaboration of all of the major players in those counties, our engineers, the cities, the townships, and the counties. We need their assistance. We need to see what they already plan and what they have on the books and how they plan to make their community more livable and more bicycle-friendly. But along with that, we also need the support of those people that live in those areas. We need them to go to their local officials, go to their elected officials and say, we want to see more bike facilities in place. We want you, because there's a priority there. There's only so much money. So it's, you know, who's going to get the money? And if the elected officials know that the citizens and the residents of their area is really wants to see more facilities, they'll start placing more of those funds into building and constructing those type of facilities. But a lot of times you'll hear, well, I don't hear anyone asking for them. And or maybe, well, we're building the paths and that's all. But just what you don't understand is that the paths don't go everywhere. You know, paths may go north and south, but there's no east-west connections.
So they need to hear from Shauna on the east side.
They need to hear from everyone.
Right, okay.
Right.
But if the Shauna's on the east side of
that's
the
right,
world,
that's
need
right.
to, is which she
needs
one
to,
voice?
Right, and, she needs to go to Reynoldsburg and say, you know, what are the plans for building bike facilities here in Reynoldsburg? I want to connect. I want to be able to bike to the park instead of drive.
Okay, and with that said, Jerry, you've been waiting a long time. You have some suggestions for bike trail additions. Shoot.
Ms. Fisher, very much so. I would like to see a connection with the Newman Trail that runs from Johnstown to Newark, which I have ridden, and I would like to see a connection with the Olentangy River Trail where you run a bridge back across the Olentangy River, and you can get into High Banks Park, beautiful place. I could put my little 18-ounce stove in my backpack and frying pan and go over there and fix breakfast in one of those nice little whatever you want to call them.
Are you inviting us or are you just tempting us?
By the way, I want to mention on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the top of the fence, and I've lived in Columbus for, 44 years and biked around it for over 40, I have to rate Columbus about a 3.5. And I have ridden a trail. They have a linear state park up in western Michigan, runs 22 miles, and rails to trails conversion. Fred Meyer of Meyer Stores, I've never ridden that. I did ride the linear state park. And Columbus needs to do much, much more of that. I want to mention one other thing on safety. I recently bought a shirt, you know, one of those with a zipper and the three pockets behind, and I was going to get a red one, but the sales clerk talked me into getting a yellow, and I'm glad that they did. And I also...
Point being, why? What's the point of that?
The what?
What's the point of having a yellow one versus a red?
They tell me that it's, especially if it's early in the morning, just breaking daylight or at dusk, it's more easily seen than red.
Okay.
And one other thing. Okay. And,
one more thing.
Light on the front and on the back. When I get on a place like Hard Road, west of Smoky Row, which is ridiculous that they didn't complete the whole thing, I turn that light on with a flashing red thing. It just, you know, better to be safe than sorry.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jerry. Good point. Better to be safe than sorry. What about the issues for people who don't know how to maintain their bikes? We've got an email from Miles. He said, please mention the Third Hand Bike Co-op where people can learn how to maintain their bikes and earn a bike by volunteering instead of spending money. Bikes still cost a lot of money these days.
Sure. Well, you can actually get a bike for the cost of a couple tanks of gas and fix it up. And Third Hand is a wonderful place. They actually, I've donated a number of bikes there, rescued them off the curb and from my garage, and they rehab them, you know, both for parts and get them back into the neighborhood. So, but many other shops around do have, you know, classes through the winter about maintenance, and Consider Biking will probably partner and offer those sorts of things in the future. But Third Hand is a wonderful resource. I think their website's thirdhand.org.
How much do the mechanics get into it in terms of intimidating people about commuting? It's one thing to go on a pleasure ride. It's another thing to think about commuting.
Well, you know, I'm an old cycling guy, and I have this adage about you need to respect and understand your equipment. But it doesn't have to be too terribly complicated. There are a few basics, and everybody should learn some of these basics. And those are the kinds of things that we do when we go into the corporate setting and offer a brown bag lunch. You know, hey, do the ABC quick check and, you know, air and brakes and your chain and quick release hubs. I mean, they're just some very basic safety things that, you know, everybody should understand. And it's really, you know, it could be learned online or through a person or through a wonderful place like Third Hand Bike Co-op.
Okay. You're listening to WOSU 820. Welcome. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about bicycle commuting in Central Ohio on how to do it and how to do it safely. Ed from Baltimore, you have an idea for an event you want to plug.
Yes. Actually, it's a Pedal for Pets, a fundraiser for CHA.
And what's CHA?
CHA is Citizens for Humane Action Animal Shelter.
Okay.
And it's next Saturday, and there will be everything from a two-mile ride on bike trails for families to a 40-mile ride, which is a pretty extensive one up toward Hoover Reservoir. So
okay.
If anybody's interested, they can go to pedalforpets.com.
Okay.
But I had a question, not necessarily around commuting, but around bicycle safety in general. I work in the south side a lot, and it seems to me more prevalent in the inner city than in the outer suburbs and the outer rings, that the kids down there don't seem to know bicycling safety. I see a lot of them just, you know, darting out of driveways or out of alleys or just blocking the road and just kind of looking at you like, I'm on a bike, what are you doing here? Is there any kind of outreach that takes place to the schools to try to teach bicycle safety so that these kids don't get involved in an accident because they're unaware and somebody else doesn't realize they're there?
Well, at
and
least,
I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. At least now they have to wear helmets. At least that's the law.
In Columbus, correct.
In Columbus.
There's safe routes to school.
I was just going to say that I so agree with him that there is a – we do need to educate our young and educate on everyone on how to bike and on the roads. And this has been a major concern of mine, a pet peeve of mine for years. And so I keep talking to Jeff about it, seeing, okay, consider biking. How are you going to – what are you going to do? And, you know, he's like, okay, we're going to do something. So I'm going to turn it over to Jeff because
– Well, as we're growing our organization, we've got so many people asking us to do so many things, and we don't have the resources to do it. But we are having wonderful discussions right now with a couple of the cities and surrounding municipalities to work with the federal Safe Routes to School program and bring that in. I think only one or two local areas are doing that, Gahanna being one, Pickerington area another. But basically there's a pot of money from the federal transportation thing that comes down if a school or a district or a neighborhood wants to then create a Safe Routes to School program, which, you know, then they do a travel plan, and then they're eligible for all this engineering money and education programs, and that's where we go out to the schools and help educate the kids. So if you're interested in that, reach out to us at Consider Biking, and we'll try and point you in the right direction.
Before I forget, what's your website?
Considerbiking.org.
Okay. And Morpsey, how can they get a hold of you at Morpsey?
Morpsey.org, www.morpsey.org, or they can just shoot me an email, bcage@morpsey.org.
Okay. And Bill Mitch from the Wetlands Research Park, what's your website?
Our website is HTTP and so on, swamp.osu.
Oh, I love that, swamp.osu. That's easy to remember. We have another email. It's from Jason. He says he commutes from North Clintonville to downtown every day, and there really are no routes that I feel very safe on, especially at 5 p.m. Again, that map you talked about, Bernice, only looks at off
during the right, the non-rush hour.
The non-rush hour
right,
times.
Right.
There is nothing safe during rush hour. Apparently.
Well, there's a couple of commuters that commute from Clintonville down to downtown. I know that a a couple people we know, Doug Morgan, and there's a couple that we know that commute to OSU. I guess it's just a matter of what type of cyclist he is. If he's just a very basic cyclist, then he might want to consider taking the Olentangy Trail.
It may be
out of his way, and it may, and it's still dark, though. At 5 in the morning, it's pretty dark. And so other than that, you know, there's a couple of High Street is a straight shot, but it's crowded. And if you're not comfortable biking in traffic, then it would be very intimidating to that person. And so then there's other ones, maybe Neal Avenue. Neal Avenue is a little crowded. It seems to be a little bit more bicycle friendly than High Street, doesn't have as many cars. So, you know, I would take a, you know, during rush hour, everything is congested.
It's dangerous to be in a car everywhere.
Yeah, during rush hour.
What are you guys looking at for the future of, or the future popularity of commuter biking in Central Ohio? I guess we wouldn't be here if there weren't a lot of hopes and dreams for it. And I guess you're probably looking forward to the day where you don't really have to be here anymore. It's going to be a given. But what do you look? We know 2012. You want to get a lot of these bike paths open and these lanes established. But
we want people to just try it. We're car free day is September the 22nd and parking day is September the 18th. And there's going to be events. Morpsey's working with the city of Columbus, the health department, to put on events to get people to try another way to work other than driving. And so we're looking at, you know, if nothing else, try those days to see if you could bike or walk to work or perhaps take transit. But we're really trying to get everyone to start realizing the benefits, all of the benefits of active transportation, of biking to work, of walking to work, leaving that automobile at home. And so you'll start seeing it everywhere in all the sustainability conferences and workshops. We have one October the 6th, and one of the sessions is going to be on active transportation. Your car-free days, your bike-to-work days, your walk-to-work days, you know, start participating in all of those, and that'll start getting you out there more and more and more.
Okay, we're running out of time now. We've had Jeff Stevens of Consider Biking and Bernice Cage of MORPSI and also Bill Mitch from the Olentangy Wetlands Research Park here today from OSU. Thanks to all of you for being here. Thanks to everybody else for listening. We'll be back in a moment with a hard look at how the Buckeye State ranks in women's advancement. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.